Judging by the contents of this Twitter Tuesday mailbag, everyone's in a blind panic. I think we all need to take a minute and settle down. So let me assuage some concerns on the Locked On Vikings podcast.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another abroad edition of the Locked On Vikings podcast. Of course, I am not at my usual setup, so if I look a little different, sound a little different, that's why. I'm also not able to edit, so this is a little bit more brain to mouth, which is going to make the show feel a little less polished. Bear with me as I am abroad doing the best I can here. But it's still Twitter Tuesday, and that means we get to talk about all of your questions, particularly following a couple of ugly Vikings wins, the Vikings an ugly 3-1. So thank you so much for making Locked On Vikings your first listen of the day, each and every day. I super, super appreciate it. As always, I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. My Twitter is at Luke Braun NFL. Show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can send me questions whenever. I will try to get to them. Usually I'm a lot better at compiling them in a doc throughout the week, but again, been traveling. So if I missed your question, I'm very sorry. If it's still relevant, please re-ask it if I don't get to it. That said, let's dive in here to Twitter Tuesday. And the first one I'm going to answer, interesting one from James K, who asks, from what I've seen online so far, our offensive success rate is usually a lot higher than our actual EPA per play. What do you think is accounting for the discrepancy? So usually, and I guess this tracks with what we've seen, that would imply a lack of explosive plays, right? Because the success rate is a binary. So we're having a lot of plays that are getting enough yards to like keep you ahead of the chains, but the average isn't being ballooned by anything. So no explosives, right? And it kind of feels that way a little bit. They've had a few big Justin Jefferson plays, but it's not like you're having Dalvin Cook blow up for 20 yards a whole lot. You're not having, we're going to talk about Dalvin Cook a lot later, by the way. You know, you're not having like a lot of these huge breakaway plays that other teams with similar success rates might be having. So that's sort of the thing about explosives is that they're a lot harder to sustain, and it's a lot harder to sustain both good and bad. The like success rate and being able to sort of consistently stay ahead of the chains will give them more opportunities as explosives. So you could even try to project a regression in that. And I wonder, there's a lot of like projection models and FPI and stuff that people use for Vegas. I wonder if those would be a little bit more bullish on the Vikings because, hey, maybe the explosive plays will turn around. I don't know. It's an interesting thing to think about, or it's just, hey, you know, they're just sort of playing this really like steady Eddie brand of ball. Next one comes from Ruben Frost, who says, Luke, please convince the hot take people that Donatel doesn't need to be fired. Yeah, don't fire your defensive coordinator 4 weeks into his tenure. Does that, like, unless there is a genuine problem with him, like this is insubordination or something, right? Like that, then of course do it. But I think we need to get like it's the fan base just wants to fire anybody who's a problem. There's later in the mailbag, people who are like, well, these guys aren't living up to their contracts. Let's trade them away. And it's just anybody who's a problem, get rid of them and then we'll be fixed. And it's sort of reminds me of that old phrase. Like if you, all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. We have to sort of think, okay, let's do a better job of diagnosing a problem, right? Okay. Defense does not look great. What is the issue there? Is it that he's not calling a good play? Do we not like this scheme? I'm sort of sympathetic to that. However, we got to at least see the scheme as it's intended to be played, because right now the players are making way too many mistakes for me to be able to say that firing Ed Donatel would actually fix anything. I just don't think that would fix the problem. I think the only thing that can fix the problem is time. And I know that that's like this really dissatisfying answer. Just be patient, everybody. It'll come around. And I don't know if it'll come around, but the only way for it to come around is time. If you start firing coordinators and putting in a new scheme in the middle of the season, which is, I think, what people want, you're basically dooming the season. I mean, they're going to get so much worse before they get better if you do that. And, you know, you'll start giving up 40. You'd be like the Lions, give up 40 a game. you don't want to become that, right? So I think the correct option is to just give it time to grow and develop. And again, I said this yesterday, the thing to look for is, are things getting a little better every week, or are they getting a little worse every week? And for me, I see them getting a little better every week. I don't see them getting to a standard that I'm happy with. They're not close to that, but they're inching a little bit closer every week. And that forward progress and momentum is sort of what I wanted to see out of the season, record be damned. So no, I'm not going to get rid of Donatel. I give it a chance to take, right? It's a totally new scheme. Players are going to struggle with this early. If you didn't expect this, well, then you just weren't listening to Locked On Vikings. Skull Actuary says, why didn't O'Connell go for it on the 4th-and-1 before the half? We got bailed out by a fumble, but not going for it seemed like the right analytical move. Yeah, that's probably, I think I agree with you, right? Because what's the situation? It was 10-7, because that was after the first field goal, and then they kicked off, forced the fumble with like 26 seconds left in the half. So you're not giving them a scoring opportunity on the other end of it, right? Like a lot of the EPA stuff that goes into like the fourth down models, like the New York Times used to have one, or the Ben Baldwin model, is the probability of your opponent scoring after they get the ball back in various situations. If you punt, if you go for it and don't get it and stuff, like that's a big key ingredient in those models. And with 26 seconds left, if you go for it and don't get it, there is no chance of the other team going down the field and scoring. Well, I don't know, 24 seconds left, and they did get a 62-yard attempt off. So maybe I'm speaking too soon there, but it's like that. It has to be that, right? It's like that hard, where you have to get a huge play down the middle and get up and spike it. And I don't know if they had any timeouts, but like, and you have to make a ridiculous field goal. So yeah, I think I probably agree with you. And plus, going from 10-7 to 13-7 doesn't actually change it from a 1-score game to a 2-score game. Nor does it really change the vibe going into the locker room or anything like that. So yeah, I think I agree that O'Connell probably should have gone for that. And he's been a little more conservative than I thought. However, I'm going to take another victory lap on an offseason take. Just getting an offensive-minded head coach into the building does not automatically make you the most aggressive team in the league. He ain't Dan Campbell. He's Kevin O'Connell. Just because both of the guys came on the offensive side of the ball doesn't mean they're going to behave the same all the time. So maybe this is just Kevin O'Connell. Maybe he's goes for it more often than Zimmer, probably, but even down the stretch, I thought that was an overblown issue. But not as much as like we want, right? Not as much as, and no coach goes for it as much as those fourth down models want them to. Those fourth down models essentially are pushing the theory, I guess is a better, more respectful word for it, pushing the theory that every NFL team is too conservative on fourth down. And they probably say, yeah, we do think, like if you ask Ben Baldwin or whoever made those models, they would say like, yeah, we do think that every NFL team is too conservative. So you're not going to have the one outlier guy, right? Just because he's offensive minded, all the offensive minded head coaches are in that same group. I will get to hopefully as many more of your questions as I possibly can. First, let me talk to you about a good old Gramble. BetOnline is your one-stop shop for all things Grambling. You can find odds, props, lines, all your regular spreads and over-unders and money lines and stuff, but also you can find like wacky props, or you can find just good props. Like just go bet Justin Jefferson receiving overs. Just go find whoever the Lions are playing and bet their team, their opponent's team points over or yards over, because their defense can't stop anything. Those over-unders are going to start to get pretty wacky. I mean, they're giving up 40 a game, and just go do it. You can do all kinds of stuff. You can build weird parlays. I know you guys like to do that. You can also go bet live right in the middle of a game. Vikings have a 2-score lead and you're not feeling great about it. Go bet their opponent to come back. Then you've got an emotional hedge. That's something I certainly am not innocent of. And then if they do, you made a little money at least. And if they don't, whatever Vikings won, you probably don't care about your bet. So you can do all that stuff at betonline.net. You can bet on all kinds of other sports as well. BetOnline, where the game starts. Moving on with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag episode. Next one I'm going to do comes from Thor. Wow. I got a Hemsworth in the mailbag. He says, has a coach ever fixed a QB after they played badly for a significant portion of their career? None come to my mind. Gosh, I'd have to look at like a list of all the QBs and biggest performance like jumps in history and what happened in them and stuff. I'm sure you could find some examples somewhere. John Elway comes to mind, just winning Super Bowls late in his career. But I don't know if that was like a jump in his play or if it just happened that, you know, he had all the right circumstances and stuff and he could actually go finally get lucky enough to win one in the late 90s. But that's one that's sort of sticks out, but that's the best I can think of. But here's the deal. Most of those, if you're going to find like big jumps in play, Josh Allen comes to mind as a recent one. You'll probably find it early in their career, like with Josh Allen, or Tom Brady's another one where he has steadily improved. I don't know if that's coaching though. I think that's Tom Brady always finding ways to get better at this or that. You know, when he first started, he was not as complete a quarterback as he was in the run, the like 2014 to 2016, 2018, those Super Bowls. He was a much more complete player because he had gained other skills. Aaron Rodgers is another one, right? Like he was very, very bad in the first couple years when Brett Favre was still there. And whenever he played in the preseason, it looked like Jordan Love, which is what Packers fans will tell you all. They're like, yeah, Aaron Rodgers looked this bad too. And then when it was actually his time to take over, he was a little better. But all of that was more early in career stuff. After I understand that you're driving here at, could Kevin O'Connell fix Kirk Cousins 10 years into his career? Has that ever happened before? Probably not. And so you're more so looking for ways to maximize who that player already is. But we'll still have to see, right? I thought this was a very classic Kirk Cousins game in a bad way. But there have also been, I mean, there are classic Kirk Cousins games that are a good thing, and winning in bad Kirk Cousins games might be what we need this to be, right? If he has a bad day, a couple of bad days, and you win, I don't think the Lions game was that. It was like fine, and then it was very good at the end. But this one was like bad, and then a very good drive at the end. If you can win games with that, then yeah, maybe you got a stew cooking here. And if you do start getting better play out of Kirk Cousins, then look out, right? Browns Massage Therapist Union says, least impressive NFC 3-1 team. It's got to be the Giants, right? Like just looking at this, they won the drunkest game ever against the Titans, and then they beat the Panthers, who cares, lose to Cooper Rush. Well, Zimmer got fired over that. Like that's a bad thing to happen. And then beat the Bears, who cares? Yeah, it's got to be the Giants. That is the most fraudulent of fraudulent 3-1 teams. There was a whole thing I tweeted out around yesterday morning. Like, I love being a fraudulent 3-1. Feels great. And it does. Like, that was not an ironic. Like, I love being a fraudulent 3-1. Excellent. Love it. Take it every time. But it is a fraudulent 3-1. I mean, you're barely beating teams. You're getting very lucky. I went back and looked at some, like, that hands to the face call and one of those pass interferences that really bailed the Vikings out in, like, critical third down situation. Just awful calls. And that's a factor of luck. But I forget who said this. I'm sorry. I can't credit it properly, but somebody kind of said, like, getting mad at the officials is like getting mad at the weather or getting mad at coin tosses. Officiating is a facet of luck. No team really has a bias. Even there's a chart you can get where like the Packers get more calls than everybody else, but even that I think is explainable to me. When I see officiating, I see it as a factor of luck that can only have so much impact on a game. And if the game was close enough for the refs to matter, you're in this no man's land where, God, this game was close enough where everything mattered. And you could look at the refs and say, that's the thing. And that was the point I was kind of making on yesterday's show. You could blame anything. If you wanted to blame the refs, yeah, you could like totally, absolutely do that. Trill Swaggets says, there was a stat that Hunter's pressures are the lowest they've been since 2015 when he was a rotational player. To be fair, he's played against good OLs. Is he slumping, or is the lack of varied pressure and predictable four-man rushes accounting for the poor productivity? I have a theory. I want to look into this, and I'll do a Patreon piece when I'm back home. But I have a theory that right now the four-man rushes, which are, I wouldn't call them predictable. I don't think that. I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening with those four-man rushes. But they're not getting home. And sometimes it's not Danielle Hunter's job to get home. Maybe that's a mistake. Maybe you should just do what Zimmer did with him, where your job is to just tee off against this tackle all day and we'll try to keep you one-on-one. You know, keep you and Everson Griffin one-on-one, and those two guys' job was just line up, tee off. That's all you do. And that got a whole bunch more pressures than what this is. And it generated more pressure on the whole as well. Now, Mike Zimmer is a really hard standard to get up to when it comes to generating pressure. that dude got like one of the best pressure generating teams and sack generating teams in the league with like DJ Wonnum being your best pass rusher. Like he's amazing. That was one of the things we're going to miss about him. Obviously other stuff was more important, so he got fired, but yeah, that regression is probably you missing Mike Zimmer. I would say that's what's happening. That said, I kind of feel like Danielle Hunter's been washed out of the run a little bit, and maybe that's because he's asking to be a little bit more physical than he always is. He's a leaner, faster player than he is like a big, stout guy. I mean, he's insanely athletic. He's got tons and tons of strength. So it's not like he's, you know, Aiden Hutchinson or DJ Wonnum just getting like blown off the spot. But I have seen him get blown off the spot sometimes, and that if you want something that's actually on him, that's on him. But I think this is more... Zimmer was really, really, really good at something, and we're just not going to find guys that are as good at it. Before I get to the last part of this mailbag, I would like to talk to you about AG1 by Athletic Greens. It's a little green powder that you mix in a cup of water in the morning every day, suck that down, and it's great for your gut health. AG1 is a like vitamin supplement mix. It's just a ton of vitamins all ground up. And it's like a bunch of dried plant things. It's all natural, mostly, I think, at least natural stuff with a little bit of flavoring in there so that it's decent enough to drink. And it's really good for your gut bacteria, your gut health is a really important thing, sort of an underrated thing when it comes to health is keeping your gut healthy. And AG1 was invented by a guy who had gut health problems, and he had this regimen of vitamins he had to take. But it was this completely insane, he used 100 pills a day and it cost him tons of money. So he was like, I need a better way. I'm going to come up with this thing where I can make a ton of this powder and mix it into water and make this way more convenient and way cheaper. And then he kind of spun that into a business. That's what AG1 by Athletic Greens is. I've been taking it myself. It's really great. Like I can feel the difference in energy and just the difference in sort of like liveliness. I really like it, honestly. Like it's great. So go to Athletic Greens and get you some AG1. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NFL network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/NFL network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Let's keep going with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag. Ken A. Wongu Simp asks, how do we fix Dalvin? Is it time we talk about a trade? I can't help but feel like there is an ulterior motive here, Ken A. Wongu Simp. So I don't think Dalvin's broken at all. And I think you saw it on that last run, right? Like there's still that shiftiness when he can get in. And I will say, I did a whole Patreon post about how good the run game was last week. Now, again, the Lions defense is in tatters, so maybe that's not all that impressive, but it's still like people in the right spot, people winning their blocks anywhere in the NFL is going to be impressive. I don't think the run game's broken at all. I think the Saints played it very, very aggressively. They shot gaps really aggressively, and like credit to their linebackers who played the run very well. The run game thing in this, to my live eye, to my very like unaided eye, looked more like the Saints doing a good job than the Vikings doing a bad job. And I don't think you can look at a stat like yards after contact or something and say, here's the running backs. This is my approximation of the running backs contribution and Dalvin Cook's isn't high enough. So let's trade him. Right. And again, when there's a problem, fix the problem. You can't fire the problem, fix the problem. So if you have a problem with Dalvin Cook and you think that something's not good anymore, tell me what that is. Is he not bursty enough anymore? Is he not, choosing the right gaps or something like that? Is it like, what is it about Dalvin Cook that's failing? Don't just say, well, his runs aren't getting as many yards. Seems like the O-line didn't have a great day against the Saints. So that's probably it. Again, that's something that I'll have to circle back to. I think I want to circle back to this game on the bye just because then I'll really have like the resources and equipment and the time to really look at it the way I want to. So maybe I'll just put a pin in all of these and like write down a list and try to answer them on the bye or something like that. But that is where I feel like that has to be left, where it's if you have a problem with Dalvin Cook or Danielle Hunter or whatever other player, tell me what that problem is. One of the key things in problem solving, this goes beyond football, this is life advice. You got a problem, diagnose the problem first. And a lot of people try to skip that step and just go straight to, well, what do I do about it? You know, I got my gut feels bad. What do I do about it? So, okay, why does your gut feel bad? Maybe you need AG1 by Athletic Greens. that's the logic, right? You have to have a clear idea of what the problem is and what the source of the problem is before you can actually go fix it. And the run game has a lot of moving parts. Sometimes it is the running back. Like last year with Madison, somebody asked a question about him, by the way. We'll get to you. I'll see if I can find it. But like last year with Madison, a lot of runs would go poorly. And it was, in my opinion, his fault, not the offensive lines. And so you can say, okay, this is Madison's thing. And his problem was that he was bouncing things outside way too much. And he was trying too hard to get edges that he just doesn't have the burst to get. It's just not who he is. And this year he's been a lot more straight up and down, and he's been a lot more willing to cut things inside, a lot more willing to bend runs back. And I think the reads have been a lot better. It's really a marked improvement from him, which I'm really happy about. I guess that brings me to that question, which comes from Jack, who asks, where did you stand on the Madison trade rumors before the season versus now 4 weeks in? So I was a fan of it. I still can be a fan of it. When it comes to trading a player, you're not doing it punitively. Again, you're not, this player is a problem. Let's get rid of him, right? Because if he's such a problem, who are you going to sell him to? Like, it's like trying to sell beachfront property in Florida because you're worried about climate change. Who's buying that house, right? If it's that bad, right? Or if it's good enough that somebody wants to buy him, maybe he's not so much a problem, right? That's kind of the way I see trades. So when it comes to trades, it's got to be, well, this player is good, but it's an excess of resources. Same reason you would draft 7 running backs in fantasy then trade one away, right? It's about managing resources and do you have an excess? And when it came to running backs especially, this happened on offensive line with the Vikings. They had more rosterable offensive linemen than they could keep. So they traded Jesse Davis away. And that was also a little bit of a cap move and stuff, but it was because they had the luxury of still having a complete unit if Jesse Davis wasn't on the team. So you traded him away, you got something back, you got a little bit of a draft pick, get some money back. That is where I kind of still stand on that. And for that, I need to feel really, really good about Wongu and Ty Chandler. And I felt great about them in the preseason. Them not getting any reps, they haven't not a single carry for either of those guys in the first 4 games tells me that they're not really part of the Vikings plan and they're more just a backup option. And maybe they're not as high on those guys as I am. In which case, yeah, definitely don't trade Madison. If snap counts are any indication, their opinion is that Alexander Madison at this moment is way better than those two guys. And so, yeah, don't get worse unless somebody's going to, maybe the Broncos really, really need a running back, which they kind of do. They're looking at Melvin Gordon, who can't hang on to the ball, taking like all the reps because Javonte Williams is hurt. So maybe you can do something like that, right? And say trade Madison to Denver and get a crazy price for them because they're in such a desperate situation. But that has a lot more to do with the economics of it than an evaluation on merit of Alexander Madison. And if anything, it's compliment to Madison saying, hey, you can be a starter over in Denver and we think they're going to pay us like you're a starter in Denver and we're going to take advantage, strike while that iron is hot. That's, I guess, where I stand on Alexander Madison. Where I stood beforehand was in a similar place. It was like, man, we've got this excess of backups and these guys seem all really good. So maybe we can get rid of Madison because we can afford to. It's this kind of luxury thing. Now it's a little bit more about, hey, let's like look at the shifting ecosystem of the NFL and see if we can't take advantage of somebody else's bad situation. And it's an opportunistic move. But in both cases, it's not necessarily Madison bad, let's get rid of him. You know what I mean? Michael Cox asks, do you feel that the winning record is a result of coaching, culture, or just flat out luck? This team looks 1-3 and not 3-1. This is a great one to end on, so we'll do that. I think it's a lot of luck, and I like close games are luck, right? There's been a million studies on this. The best teams in the world just don't keep winning close games, and the worst teams don't keep losing close games. Nobody has control over this because, again, when the game is close, it comes down to factors of luck. Comes down to, did you get ref calls? You have no control over that. It comes down to coin flips and did the wind bounce right? Things like fumble luck. Those things are swinging enough where it feels like those decide those close games and you just don't have any control over how the football bounces on a punt or a fumble. You can't culture your way into that, right? Like, look at the Bills right now. There's this whole Josh Allen doesn't win 1-score games. And there's this whole big deal now that he won a 1-score game. that's probably just randomness. They were probably just on a particularly unlucky streak. And now if that flattens back out, they'll be back to 500 in close games again. You know, the Vikings last year, they were in 14 close games. That's the problem. They went 6-8 in them. So they're one game below normal, pretty normal luck, right? But being in 14 close games meant you're down to luck in 14 of your 17 games. Well, that's not good enough. Seems like they're about the same if they're going to be in a close game every single time, which they've only been a close game 2 of 2 here, and they've won both of them. Great. Try to avoid the close game in the first place. Don't let Andy Dalton score on you twice when you're up 16 to or when you're up 13-7 and score in the red zone a little bit. I think that kind of thing can make it so, yeah, we don't need this to be a close game. We don't need to worry about a double doink from 62 out. We can just win the game and the fourth quarter won't matter. Those are the games that send you to the playoffs and the Super Bowl. The close games are luck. They just always are. That said, I would say they feel maybe more like a 2-2 team because they won a really good one. They lost a really bad one, right? So 1-1, and then they had 2 close games. Call that 1-1, and they should be 2-2. They are 3-1. We love this. We take it. I'm not looking any gift horses in the mouth here. It's great. But go home, take care of business against the Bears. Go be 4-1, head into a tough Miami game, and then you're in your bye. That would be a great situation to be in. And it's like this sort of tug of war in my brain. Close games are luck. They are not reflective on your team. They are reflective of your record, though, and your situation and your positioning. So take advantage of that positioning and go win some games. I think they can. And I think, again, I echo what I said yesterday. They are so much better than they've been, or they can be so much better than they've been, which is both exciting and frustrating, right? They've got so much meat left on the bone they can be getting, and it's frustrating that they're not getting it, but they have not bumped their heads on any kind of ceiling here. There's still a lot of room to grow if they can manage to clean some stuff up. It's a pretty big if, right? But there is a chance for these Vikings to get better as the season wears on. So getting these early wins is a pretty big deal. Tomorrow, I will try to do a show. I will be sort of out in the wilderness a little bit. So if I don't get a show up, that's why. But hopefully I'll be able to talk to you a little bit about something. We'll find something. I can't really do my usual tape thing, but I can do my best here. Maybe describe some of the plays that I could get my hands on. But we'll get this game broken down one way or another, either bye or piecemeal as we go along. We'll figure it out. I will see you all tomorrow. And as always, Skol.